This is an ENN special report. Now reporting.
Six.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay, it's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ENN on this hump day. Wednesday, June 2nd. I'd like to start off by saying good evening to Michael.
I do like cauliflower, though. It feels like I'm eating little brains.
It's weird. I'd like to say good evening to Don.
I thought about Peter's arm hair. Taken out of context.
Do I have any others, Anthony? I forget what you told me.
What do I do? Sit down and join in?
Yeah, that was something else. Earlier in the program. I'll tell you what, you miss one segment, you miss a lot on the K Show. Am I right?
Oh,
am I right?
Yeah.
Yo, Peter, can we get some hardwood tonight?
Darn right you can. I went with
men
the
and women and women and women and men and men. Sex.
He was a little in depth with that. He had a
lot of don't know if I tell the 11-year-old exactly what he told her.
So I mentioned this earlier. The NFL story today. It's being reported now by the AP, by a lot of places, including our own Pablo Torre on The Daily, on ESPN, wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL to halt race norming. Had you guys ever heard of the term race norming?
No.
No.
So the NFL on Wednesday pledged to end the use of, quote, race norming. Race norming was a practice done which assumed that black players started out with lower cognitive functioning than non-black players. This is all part of a $1 billion settlement for brain injury claims and to review past scores for any potential race bias. Essentially, to help this makes some semblance of sense, even though there's no sense to be made of this. In an effort to pay out less to players who were suing the league because of dementia that they had incurred because of their time in the NFL, the NFL started off with the assumption that black players had lower cognitive function. Thus, showing a smaller gap between the cognitive function that they had later in life after dementia. So
it's startling that this actually took place and that they just expect it to just go away because now they're not going to do it anymore. There should be lawsuits about that. That this was a defense of theirs.
And, you know, Ballard texted me earlier and said it really well. He's like, I just love football. I practically beg the NFL to take my money, and they make it so damn hard to support them. I don't even know. I mean, in a lot of ways, how does it not make you rethink everything? You know, every conversation that we have about the treatment of black players, black quarterbacks, the Colin Kaepernick conversation, every single thing that you think about this league with regard to race, how is it not all summed up when they had a policy that basically stated cognitive damage to black players inherently is different than white because they're not as smart. That's essentially what they were doing.
I'd love to hear, like, the counter argument, right? Like, what could be the logic that would make them not racist?
And, guys, this policy, it started in the 90s. This isn't like something that existed from prehistoric times. The 90s. And here's a statement. The replacement norms will be applied prospectively and retrospectively for those players who otherwise would have qualified for an award, but for the application of race-based norms. The NFL said in a statement. I'm sorry for the pain this episode has caused black former players and their families. Ultimately, this settlement only works if former players believe in it. And my goal is to regain their trust and ensure the NFL is fully held to account. That's Christopher Seeger, the lead player's lawyer, who negotiated the 2013 settlement. So we're just now becoming aware of this policy all these years later. So far, the awards for players have averaged $516,000 for the 379 players with early-stage dementia and more than $715,000 for the 207 players with moderate dementia. But remember, those standards for what's considered dementia are completely skewed because of this backwards racist practice. So, the NFL, they make it tough.
I don't know what to say.
I know.
Usually you have a back and forth. You want to see what the other side could be. But clearly, it was something that they were able to get away with. And another example where the NFL doesn't change it until they're basically forced to. They never changed. They were going to never change the policy about concussions and dementia until they were forced to by the court. And now this comes up because of those lawsuits, and now they'll change it. They knew it was there because it benefited them.
And let me just add, I hope that when you hear a story like this, even someone who's maybe not totally in tune to issues of social justice or racial equality, and when they hear a story about something that they deem to be a black athlete or black fan or black person in America being sensitive, and they go, oh, why are you being sensitive about one small thing? I hope they understand, and you can take this as part of the backdrop of everything. How can you ever look at anything as just being a small whatever thing when there are conspiratorial, terrible, decades-long practices like this that exist? It makes something like last night, for example, that much more difficult to deal with. And we talked about it earlier on the show. Marcus Stroman was irked, as many fans were, by the racial undertones of a joke by a Diamondbacks analyst, Bob Brenly, who pointed out when Stroman was pitching yesterday, he said, quote, "Pretty sure that's the same do-rag Tom Seaver used to wear when he pitched for the Mets." He has since apologized. Stroman tweeted last night, "Onward and upward, through all adversity and racist undertones. The climb continues through all." Speaking before the game today against Arizona, Mets manager Luis Rojas called the comments very inappropriate. "I was disappointed when I heard it. If it was like a joke or something, I didn't get it. That was my initial reaction to it. It's completely inappropriate." Brenly has said he is going to undergo sensitivity training with the Diamondbacks.
I do wonder about that.
What that even means?
Yeah, really, what is that? It's window dressing.
No, it's
you're really going to change a guy who's 65 years old with a sensitivity training?
Well, then that would be on him. You know, if he truly is sorry and he takes it seriously, it maybe could open his eyes to, you know, behavior that has been going on for a long time in his life, and maybe he'll be a little bit more sensitive next time. You know, this isn't your uncle, who your inappropriate uncle at Thanksgiving. This is a guy that's got a major platform. He's a television analyst for a Major League Baseball team. So his words are heard by more than just a handful of relatives at the dinner table. So if he takes it seriously, then maybe something good could come from it, right?
You hope so.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go to something basketball-related. Basketball world kind of taken aback by Coach K deciding to call it quits after the 2021-22 season. We had Ian O'Connor, who's writing a book on Coach K, on the show earlier. We asked him if the decision comes as a surprise.
There were rumblings, and he'd been talking with his family about this, Michael, going back about a month. And as far as I could determine, it wasn't a definite until recently. And there were some people advising him who thought, you know, maybe let's not do the farewell tour, coach two-thirds or three-quarters of the way through the season, then announce it then. But that there was a feeling from Coach K, if you do that, then while I'm recruiting, I'm not recruiting in good faith, as I know I'm leaving and not telling kids that I'm trying to sign at Duke. So I think at age, he's going to turn 75 in February. I think the pandemic took quite a bit out of him. Obviously, he had a daughter and granddaughter who tested positive. He was in quarantine for that. And you could just see how the season really wore on him. It was a season from hell in a lot of ways. And I think, I imagine for him, that was part of the equation here.
Jay Will spoke on it, too, on KJZ. Of course, we know he became a hero at Duke under Coach K. Here's Jay Will.
I mean, you ask this guy, what hobbies do you have? His hobby is changing the lives of individuals. Like, I still don't think that's going to stop, but his life is his family and the program. I just never thought we would be getting to this point so fast. I'm still kind of taken back by it, to be frank with you, man.
So you know, fast. He's 75.
Yeah, but the pandemic has ended careers early. I think, you know, with Doc Emmerich and Marv Albert, we saw examples where having to work through the pandemic maybe open their eyes to another life in kind of a positive way. And then you heard Ian O'Connor say how hard the pandemic was for him and Duke this year. That probably sped it up. All right, and, you know, it wore him down last year. It certainly was not a great season. You know, maybe it just opened his eyes to now it's time.
Don, let's go back to last night. You were dialed in, as you've ever been in basketball, to watch this action on TNT.
Let him get out of his way. Lillard on a three. And he hits. Oh, my goodness. Gets it back, launches deep three. Splash.
Wow.
He leaves the door open. Lillard. He is a killer. Oh, steps back, fires. Puts it in again.
Oh, my goodness.
Lillard launches. He bites it in.
Wow.
Damian Lillard taking Denver's heart.
55-10. Spiro Didi's on the call. By the way, I love Greg Anthony just laughing through all of it. I mean, there's almost nothing more you could do. Don, that's one of the great things in sports, by the way. The late night West Coast playoff heroics. It's so classic.
Yeah, and it stunk for the NBA, right? Because TNT is stuck in this miserable Lakers-Suns game. You know, and this game was relegated to NBA TV, which luckily I have. But looking on social media, a lot of people do not. And they've got the bug in the upper left-hand corner with the Laker-Suns score. And that's the 30 becomes 40 points or whatever. And meanwhile, he's hitting shots from everywhere. And in the second overtime, it was killer. Covington missed the dunk that would have cut the deficit to one. Then there was a play where at the sideline, there was an out-of-bounds, which was killer. C.J. McCollum made a move, and he stepped out of bounds. Otherwise, there would have been an opportunity there. So they kind of – and they didn't defend well either. But just to see just – threes from all angles, hands in his face. And there were at least once, maybe two times, because Andrew was watching too, where you could have called a four-point play where he could have been fouled on him.
Now, why are you such a big Portland supporter?
I'll never say.
Now, but the sad thing with Peter, with his cable system, NBA TV is just now showing the 1969 Knicks championship game.
Oh, it's heating up right here in the third quarter.
Yeah. But I honestly, that was fun. It was a fun. It took me away from the Met game. Like I missed that. Well, it wasn't even a fight. It was just a gathering of baseball players on the field.
I love those.
Because I was just all in. Michael, I think you had said you had went to bed. I don't know if you were watching the basketball. And then I went over to the Mets, and that was just a heartbreaking loss there too. So it was a tough night. But, God, he is just fun to watch.
Hey, we have to congratulate John Venezia from Farmingdale, New York. He's going to the Islanders game tomorrow. And if you didn't win this time, make sure you're tuned into DCR tomorrow morning for another chance.
Nice.
Yeah.
Other big news from basketball today is the end of the Danny Ainge era in Boston. A lot of news coming. Fast and furious. Brad Stevens replacing Ainge in the front office, so now they'll need a new head coach. Woof. As Michael said earlier, I mean, the Nets beat the Celtics into a new era. Here's Woj on with Greeny earlier on the Celtics changes.
Danny Ainge, who has been thinking about a succession plan in Boston. He had been talking with ownership about it. There was a sense he might go another year and stay on the job and try to figure that out over time, but made the decision here recently that he was ready to move on and that Brad Stevens was ready to move on from coaching and move into a front office role. He's going to be the president of basketball operations. He'll have the same title Danny Ainge had, and now Boston is going to start a search for a new coach. And Ainge's career trajectory was similar. He was a coach, went into the front office in Phoenix, and now that's happening here in Boston, or will happen here in Boston with Brad Stevens.
Oh, I don't know how to feel about all of this, guys. Here's my question. Is this all just because of the way this season played out?
I think it has a lot to do with it because this team was expected to go pretty far. But the interesting thing is that it didn't go far, not because it was miscalculated. So many people got hurt. Can't predict that, so I wonder why he's being so hard on himself.
Yeah, but there was a lot of times. Peter would know better than us because he's watching more often. But you know, how many times did we say, what's wrong with this team? When are they going to wake up?
That's the thing. Like that's why to me I was going back and forth with Nick Wright from FS1 on Twitter earlier because he thinks it was good news for Celtics fans. And I'm like, listen, at every point in which I've doubted Danny Ainge, he seems to have always turned things around. And with the exception of one year in which they were the worst team in the league 15 years ago, this is a team that's basically perpetually in the conversation, right? Like, it's sort of like the conversation to me that you have about Brian Cashman. The Celtics are generally in the conversation with an opportunity to win the conference. And this year, I thought the replacement of Kyrie by Kemba would have worked out. It didn't. It seemed like a great move at the time. They have... In Tatum, Brown, and Marcus Smart, they seem to have a core three players. They need one more star maybe in this version of the NBA. But it's not like this is a team that's hopeless. Anyways, that will do it for ENN on this Wednesday, June 2nd.
All right, the eighth inning at Chase Field in Arizona at 6-6, Mets and the Diamondbacks. Yankees and the Rays tonight. It'll be Jordan Montgomery against Shane McClanahan. And, of course, the Knicks and the Hawks game 5. So Chris Carlin will take over at 6:30 for a half hour. Then the Knicks pregame at 7 and 7:30 is the play-by-play. In the words of Billy Joel, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. I'm afraid it's time for goodbye again. See everybody. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.